Our final case this morning is number 16-1622, Athena Health, Inc. v. CareCloud Corporation. Mr. Corbett.
May it please the court, I want to focus my initial remarks on the 101 issues and spend a little bit of time later on some of the APA due process issues.
Can I ask a question, though, about technological invention? I mean, are we just collapsing technological invention and the 101 Alice standard into one, essentially? Or are they separate inquiries?
I think they're separate inquiries, Your Honor. The technological invention inquiry for the jurisdiction, it's a two-part inquiry under the rules. The first part, is it novel and non-obvious? And the second part, is it a technological solution to a technological problem.
Is it collapsing the second part then with the initiation standard?
I think the second part overlaps. The second part of the technological invention standard of the jurisdictional question overlaps with part of the inquiry for Alice Step 2.
It's the same?
For the part of the inquiry for Alice Step 2 where you're looking at is there a technological solution to a technological problem, I think they're very similar. They may be the same. I don't think this court has said that, but they use the same language.
But how could it be that you'd get into a CBM proceeding involving 101 and that at the end of the day you decide that it is 101 eligible, and that means it shouldn't have been initiated in the first place, and therefore there's no estoppel effect to the final decision. I mean, that really can't have been what Congress intended, could it?
I think that's a fair question, Your Honor. The rule does say what the rule says. I do understand that concern that the jurisdictional part of the regulation serves as a gatekeeping function for allowing the CBM to go forward, but it is. I mean, the regulation says what the regulation says,
what does it say?
it's a two-part analysis.
I mean, as we said in Versada, it doesn't say much, unfortunately.
As you said in Versada, it doesn't say much, but Versada can't change what the regulation says. I mean, the regulation says 42.301B. It's a technological invention if the claim subject matter as a whole recites a technological feature that is novel and non-obvious, part one, and solves a technical problem using a technical solution, part two.
Well, why? I mean, in SiteSound, we said that that's reviewed under an arbitrary and capricious standard. I mean, why can't we say, well, the initial determination to be sustained if it's a reasonable determination on the record that existed at that time, but that later on there's more evidence received and the final decision may be different from the initial decision, but that doesn't mean that the initial decision was wrong or that the proceeding was improperly initiated.
I think as a general matter you could say that, but what the board did here in the initial stage, it didn't apply the as a whole requirement of 37 CFR 42. It looked at the specific components of the claim and it looked at the conventionality.
You're demanding a level of precision at the outset, which it seems to me is very difficult to achieve and creates this situation where you're conflating the initiation decision with the final decision, which you've agreed would be impractical.
I think it is impractical to say that the initiation decision has to be of the same level, same scope as the final decision. At the same time, the regulation does say what the regulation says, and following the language of the regulation, applying the claim subject matter as a whole and looking at whether or not it's solving a technical problem, a technical solution to a technical problem, I don't think the board did that, even came close to doing that in the initiation stage here. But
okay.
I understand the point. It is a concern. I understand the concern that was raised in Versada. It is it's a gatekeeping statute. I don't disagree that the board can build the record and come to a determination at the end that may differ from that.
So why don't you turn to 101?
Sure. So following up from that, so this case does present a unique set of facts, and it is what the claims cover here is a specific technical solution to a specific technical problem in the insurance industry. It's the interaction, the integration between a doctor's office claim submission system and an insurance company back-end payor verification system. And I think that's the crux of the issue here. The board didn't give full weight and full consideration to the crux of the invention here. And on the same record, the board found that the claims were novel and non-obvious. And on the same record, it was undisputed that there were other ways of doing this, that there were other ways of implementing the idea that, and so preemption was not a concern here. And so the board, I think, fell into the trap that this court has cautioned about in recent cases, such as McRow and Bascom and Enfish, that you can't, when you're characterizing or attempting to characterize the abstract idea, you can't overgeneralize, you can't over-abstract, and you can't deconstruct it into these individual components and look at the conventionality of each individual component. I think the Supreme Court has said, and this court has said, you can always boil down any idea into some level of abstraction. And that's the struggle with all of these cases.
But how is this that different from the actual program that was at issue in Alice?
What's going on here is it was new, it was novel, it was something that hadn't been done before. And if I can step up and step back and explain what was going on in the industry,
at a high level.
At a high level, sure. Pre-computerization and then post-computerization. Before the computer age, it was expensive for the insurance companies to review all the claims. And so there was no computers, so they essentially, and this is...
So computers enabled them to review the claims more efficiently.
So once things became computerized, the insurance companies implemented these rules. And this is what created the problem. The computers, the insurance companies implemented rules by which they would reject claims. There was no integration between the doctor's office, the medical practice management servers, and the insurance companies. So what happened was all of these insurance claims were coming in, and they were getting rejected. And they weren't getting paid, and there was no integration between the systems. And that's at the heart of the invention of
but
the
world. But surely it was practical, and it was done that these claims were checked against a set of rules. For typos, for example, that would be a rule, right? Would typos be a rule?
Typos, there was error checking.
Would typos be a rule?
Would typos be a rule? Checking for a typo could be a rule.
Right, okay. So that was done before, right?
It was not done in the sense of a pre-claim submission. There were typos that were checked at the MPM level. There were things that were done. There was error checking. There was a verification process that was done at the initial stage. There were
even pre-computer. Even pre-computer, didn't the insurance companies notify the providers or their service companies that we won't accept a claim unless it provides this information? And that's our rule.
So there were different ways of understanding what the insurance companies would do. And that's actually one of the inventive aspects of the claim. through the experience of the medical practice management or through the experience of the doctor's office, people understood what was going to get rejected and what wouldn't get rejected. But what wasn't done was taking the real-time updated rules from the insurance company and integrating it with the doctor's office so that you would know before the claim was submitted at the doctor's office using an innovative...
But the doctor's office, before computers knew that the form had to be completed and they were checking to see that the form was completed, right?
The doctor's office was doing eligibility checks, and that's described in the patent. What the doctor's office wasn't doing was checking to see if the insurance company's rules were up to snuff.
Completeness? They weren't checking for completeness?
I don't think there's anything in the record that's saying that either rules were being applied from the insurance company or that rules were being applied in an updated fashion, or that it was being integrated in real time.
Where in the patent is there a specification of what exactly the rules are that were being implemented or guarded against?
So the patent describes... The rules database and the rules and how they're implemented at column 6.
But it doesn't define what those rules are, right?
In column 6, it does describe how the rules will be applied. There are other portions of the specification that talk about how the workflow processing engine and the rules engine will apply those rules, but the rules are described both in column 6 and in the claim itself as to the novel aspects that were needed to integrate these systems. I mean, this is not the case.
The rules are not novel, right?
A rule could be novel,
but a completeness rule is a rule within the meaning of the claims, right?
A completeness rule could be a rule within the meaning of the claims, yes.
Are you familiar with the decision that we issued yesterday, Intellectual Ventures versus Capital One?
Yes.
Where we said an unspecified set of rules isn't enough for purposes of Step 2 of Alice?
And I think in that case, this is the indexing, the XML indexing case. Mm-hmm. The concern there was... If I recall, I just read this last night. The concern in that case was the abstract idea of indexing, searching on a database, and then trying to narrow the application of that to the field of use using XML tags. My understanding is XML tags were synonymous. XML and tagging were synonymous, so it was essentially a limitation on the field of use, which doesn't allow you to pass step two. What we have here is very different. I mean, what we have here is much more akin to the case in Bascom and Amdocs, where you have distribution of elements that are put together in a novel way using conventional elements. So, you know, the question in Bascom was the abstract idea internet filtering, it was conventional network elements, conventional computer elements that were arranged in a way that hadn't been done before. What we have here, yes, there are conventional computer elements. Yes, there are rules. We don't disagree that in general a rule could be conventional or a database could be conventional. But what you have here, and I think the key here, is that the implementation of the rules in the database and the interactive interface, which was novel, by the way, and hadn't been put together in a way that had been done here, integrated the two systems in a way that hadn't been done before. Nobody before this invention at the doctor's office was able to see the rules in real time from the insurance company and then interact with the errors and fix it in advance. There was some error checking at the MPM stage. There was some error checking with some fraud questions at the insurance office.
But wouldn't people at the doctor's office have have the set of insurance company rules, and when they're submitting a form, they would have to make sure that they satisfied those rules, right? I mean, this is just doing that faster.
I don't think there's any evidence that anyone, I don't think there's evidence that anyone at the doctor's office was applying rules from the insurance company. I think what was being done at the doctor's office was verification checks.
They were told to complete the form. That's a rule. You admit that's a rule. And they were checking to see that they completed the form, right?
Your Honor, that's different than knowing in advance, are you going to pass all of the rules and classes? Are you filling out the form? Are you going to meet all the requirements for each particular plan? Are you getting the most up-to-date rule? And that hadn't been done before.
Is it your point that the rules could change on a daily basis, and that this is a system that allowed you to have those updates rather than
rules? That was one of the key aspects that distinguished this over the prior art, was the ability to update the rules in real time directly from the payor server. That was one of the key limitations here, from the payor server. That hadn't been done before. The PTAB here below said that hadn't been done before, and that hadn't been integrated. And if I can, for a moment, I know I'm beyond my time.
Yeah, well, I think we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. We're out of time right now. Okay?
The interface.
No, you're going to have to sit down.
Okay.
You're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Farris.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Ozzie Farris, and I represent CareCloud in this matter. Your Honors, in the underlying CBM proceeding, on the strength of the available record, the PTAB got it right that the claims are directed to the general abstract idea of scrubbing claims before submission, and that the claims recite mere conventional and routine computer components to carry out that abstract idea. The PTAB's finding is entirely consistent, Your Honors, with what the inventors tell us in the patent. For decades, and these are words straight out of the patent, not mine, for decades, medical practitioners would interact with insurance companies to determine whether there was a problem with a medical claim submission. And this happens before.
What about this last limitation, though? I think that this is one that is somewhat different from just putting something on a computer.
Sure.
And the ability to have updated rules from the payor that you can automatically get, rather than go back to some book that you received in the mail, maybe, you know, a year before. Doesn't that materially change the nature of the invention?
That's not the invention, Your Honor. The claims don't talk about, there's a generic reference to integration of disparate and distinct systems, but the claims don't recite any integration whatsoever. In fact, we don't even know, based on the claim language, whether these components are even in communication. These are all method claims. We speak about servers, we speak about databases, we speak about client stations, but there's no communication means or mechanism or structure by which these components talk. And they reference the specification, and they're trying to backfill the claim by getting limitations about these so-called updates are taking place in real time. The only thing the claims speak to is that they're received from a payer server, but there's no explanation as to how that happens. And we know from Your Honor's ruling in Accenture that the claim invention is what needs to be assessed. You cannot look at the more detailed specification to take an otherwise abstract idea and make it patent eligible.
What about the notion that the board found this to be non-obvious and not anticipated?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, Your Honor, and it's one that has been addressed before. There are two issues that I think they categorically try to leverage and really just collapse the 101 issue down to really two questions, right? Novelty / non-obviousness and preemption. Neither one of those is dispositive on the 101 issue. It's a separate substantive determination that needs to be made on its own facts. And the Supreme Court in Mayo said very clear, a novel and non-obvious claim directed to a purely abstract idea, which is exactly what we have here, is nonetheless patent ineligible. And it makes sense, Your Honor, because, first of all, you'd eviscerate the whole 101 requirement altogether if you simply said it's based on whether it's novel or non-obvious. But secondly, even if you...
That would be a good idea.
Well, yeah, some would argue that. but it would also be absurd in the sense that So on the strength of, for example, these references that we've proposed to the CBM and the PTAB, it would seem to make the 101 determination a temporary one or an ad hoc one, in the sense that, so it's patent eligible because it's not obvious over these references, but what happens if later on some additional better references, let's say, turn up? Does it all of a sudden turn the abstract idea into being a patent eligible subject matter? It doesn't make much sense. There are two separate determinations. The 101 determination is the front door into the patent office. If you can't get past that, separate and apart from 102, 103, then the fact that on the record evidence of a certain combination of references, the subject matter may be not obvious, has no bearing whatsoever on the 101 determination. And then secondly, the preemption concept is similarly being misapplied by appellants. The Ariosa case and more recently the McRow decision made it very clear that where a patent's claims are deemed only to disclose ineligible subject matter, and that's exactly what the PTAB found here, Your Honor, as they are in this case, preemption concerns are fully addressed and made moot. And that makes a lot of sense, Your Honor, because the focus of 101 is what is the invention? The invention here is doing nothing more than detecting and correcting errors in a medical claim submission before you send it off to the insurance company for payment.
And does it correct them, or does it pop up a screen that says you need to correct them?
Well, I think Your Honor's had offered up in a situation where if there's a typo, I think it's rather common sense to correct that typo before you submit the payment, especially if you know, and this is on both sides of the parties here, the expert testimony is that everyone wants to get paid quickly. So if for no other reason, you're going to detect that typo and you're going to correct that typo before you send that payment, that bill off to the insurance company, because it's going to delay payment if it's not fixed. And so the prior art and the evidence of record, both from the teachings of the patent itself, from the expert testimony of record. In fact, Your Honors, I think there was a comment made that there is no evidence in the record that in the way this was done before, it was done with medical practitioners. That's entirely incorrect. Their own expert, Mr. Gooden, specifically testified and actually recalled a binder of rules that used to be used to process these claims before submission and to use to detect and correct error. And so the reality is, and I think there was some reference made to clear jurisprudence on this issue, that the mere enhancing or speeding up or making more efficient of an abstract idea on a computer does not take the otherwise ineligible subject matter and make it pass muster under 101.
That's a basic Alice.
That's basic Alice, Your Honor. And it goes all the way back. You mentioned intellectual ventures. There was a decision from a few years ago where that was exactly the point. It chronicled the list of cases that made that point very clear. And that's exactly what's going on here. You're essentially, if you look at the distinct components in these claims, you have a medical practice management server, you have a client station, you have a database, you have a payer server. The PTAB correctly determined that these are all standard, generic, routine, conventional components. And that's straight out of the specification. I think the server is as defined as being any computer. You can't get more general than that.
What is your response to the issue of the interplay between technological invention and the 101 inquiry? I mean, your brief, even more than, so than the other side, completely collapses the analysis.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the issue, I mean, you have to look
at... Glad you admit that, yeah.
Yeah. I tried to be very precise in making my point. The reality is the rules say what they say, but so do the opinions of this court. And this court made it very clear that it is a technical invention. The PTAB, under that authority, isolated the technical aspects of the claims and said they're routine, conventional, well-known. Versada also made it clear that it's premature to assess the patentability of the method steps. And that's common sense. At the end of the day, it's a jurisdictional determination that's being made, not a substantive one. And so I would say that for purposes of the jurisdiction.
But the inquiries can't be, the standards can't be the same for initiation and the final result, because if the claims were determined to be patent eligible, then that would not create an estoppel, and that can't be what was intended. There has to be a different standard for initiation and for invalidation at the end, right?
I think so, although I suspect that the scope of the record would evolve throughout the proceeding and there may be some more light shed on the issue. But at the end of the day, and at
least
it's
also the different standards. I mean, it's a question of it doesn't have to be preponderance at the initiation stage.
Arbitrary and capricious at the jurisdictional level versus preponderance at the substantive merit level. So, but certainly, as applied here, the PTAB did what it had to do. It identified and called out the technical aspects and determined that there was no technical solution being offered here. These are routine conventional components.
We don't, if we agree with you on the 101 analysis, we don't need to reach your obviousness points, right?
That's correct. I mean, we disagree with the obviousness determination, Your Honors, but at the end of the day, all claims have been rejected.
I mean, the obvious determination was in large measure predicated on your failures of proof, right?
Well, I think the proof was there. I think it was misunderstood or misapprehended and in some cases outright ignored, frankly. I think our brief sets out the reasons why that's the case, but just two instances that I would like to point your attention to is the PTAB in the final written decision specified that there's two points that they made, that the petitioner did not assert in its petition that, one, a person of skill in the art would have included Holloway's rules and Barber to correct or identified errors, or two, that a person of skill in the art would have included Rieker's real-time determination for each payer and Barber to enhance Barber's error detection function with updated information. There's two specific points in our petition, our original petition, where we make that exact same point. So it calls into question the extent to which the PTAB reviewed all of the evidence. And our position is under KSR and the more recent case in Randall that you can't take a very rigid approach to making the obviousness determination. It has to
You can't just list elements in the prior art. You've got to have some basis for combining those elements, right?
We do have those bases, and the two examples that I just mentioned here are bases that we provided in the petition. And furthermore, there was also some, I think it was unfortunate, but the PTAB seemed to disregard Dr. Bergeron's supplemental declaration. And I would add only that that was our first opportunity to respond to appellant's response and preliminary response to the original petition. And one of the issues that came up is that they defined the term rules to be coded logic that evaluates and information that performs an action or something along those lines. And so we felt the need to submit a supplemental declaration where Dr. Bergeron applies that understanding as well and at the end of the day concludes that there's still the claims are still invalid over the proposed combination. And so our position is that the 103 determination, although mooted entirely, if the 101 goes our way, it's still, we believe that it was not properly decided and Your Honor should take a look at it.
Okay, anything further?
That's all I have to say, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Corbett, you have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of quick points. This is not just the enhancement and speeding up of some abstract idea, just the same way that in Bascom it wasn't just the enhancement and speeding up of filtering on the internet, and the way in Amdocs it wasn't just the enhancing and speeding up of correlating records on a network. Those were things that, yes, they sped things up and they enhanced things, but they also did things differently. It was a different arrangement of conventional components in both of those cases. We have an arrangement of components that integrates the insurance, the health insurance, the payor rules updated with the doctor's office in a way that had not been done before in real time with rules from the payor. And this is important using the claim edit screen. And I didn't get to talk about this as much in my opening, but the claim edit screen was one of the key novelty aspects, both in the initial prosecution and with the PTAB's decision for non-obviousness. It was an innovative interface that hadn't been used before in the context of the insurance industry that allowed the folks at the doctor's office to see in the same screen both the error and the a way to correct it at the same time. And that hadn't been done before. There were this was one.
I asked that question, and so does it autocorrect, or does it sometimes autocorrect when there's a typo?
What the claim covers is on the same screen. It gives you an indication of the error and the ability to correct it.
So, but it doesn't autocorrect.
I don't believe it autocorrects. Okay. So that's point two. The claim edit screen point. Point three is this integration. The integration, it's spelled out right there in the claims and how you take the rules from the payor and interact with the doctor's office. And it does it in a way that leaves many other unclaimed implementations that are not field of use things, but there are lots of different ways you can get rules from the insurance company. There are lots of different ways you could use an interface that allows you to receive those rules and works with them, but this is a very specific implementation, Your Honor.
Okay, all right, thank you. I think we're out of time. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted, and that concludes our session for this morning.